Welcome to Packet Pushers, a podcast on the data networking industry where real engineers get together to talk nerdy. A place where one conversation is streamed from a single source to multiple listeners using a single path. Yep, that's just us talking, and you'll be listening to a live emulation of a multicast stream. Excited? Of course you are. When real engineers get together to talk nerdy, we don't have to apologize for talking technical, for waving our virtual hands at the virtual whiteboard, breathing hot, stale air in a stuffy meeting room, and pretending that we know what all this technical discussion is about. Because we know. Today's Packet Pushers podcast is sponsored by Avaya, makers of fine Ethernet fabrics using the shortest path bridging. And today we want to show you more about that and take you to a special place where we never have to apologize that you don't know what it's about. It's special here in our virtual boardroom. Let's get together and start the show. Let's go around the table and first of all, welcome once again this week, the man himself, Mr. Banks. How are you, sir?
I'm fighting a miserable, lousy cold, if I'm quite honest with you. And it's this annoying sort of a thing where, you know, you're going along and then for no reason at all, you start to hack and cough uncontrollably. So I may be excessively on mute during this podcast.
Those of you who don't know and can cast your mind back far enough, until May 2011, we did originally speak to our next guest, Mr. Paul Unbehagen. Paul, introduce yourself to the audience.
This is Paul Unbehagen. Good to be back. And I'm the chief architect for Avaya Networking and also a member of ITF, IEEE, co-author of SBB, several other things.
So you've actually been involved with it. Now, if I remember, we spoke to you in show 40 in May 2011 where we discussed shortest path bridging. Well, that's a long time ago, by the way. That's more than 2 years ago.
That is a while. Remember? Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember that one.
I do remember. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago.
Has the network changed much in 2 years?
No, but you definitely made me feel older.
Result, my work is done here. Also joining us today is Darren Giacomini. How are you, Darren? Please introduce yourself and tell the audience what you do.
I'm doing great. My name is Darren Giacomini. I'm the network architect for Schneider Electric's Pelco division. We're a video surveillance company. Does extensive works in different verticals, hospitals, casinos, public infrastructure. And the real crux of our interest in what Avaya is providing with SPB is the capabilities that this multicast brings. In this type of environment, it's critical that we get very, very fast response. So it's a major benefit to what we're doing for critical infrastructures.
Why don't we just jump straight in, because that's the crew that's here today. And you've basically alluded to this to some extent. And Paul, why don't you tell us a bit more about the relevance of IP multicast in today's networks? Because a lot of people sort of feel multicast might be passing us by, but there are still key functional uses for it today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're seeing a lot of use of multicast. It's growing more and more. It's kind of funny. You have that economy of a growth in applications using it, and you have a lot of fear by people to actually run multicast protocols because they've been so complex. I've been personally surprised, having worked on a lot of the IP multicasts with a good team for SBB, in the amount of uses people are putting this into. It's always the fun part when you're developing protocols is seeing how people actually use it in ways you never imagined. Of course, we wanted this to work, so it was just brain dead easy multicast for the small enterprise to the very large residential IPTV deployments, and we are definitely seeing some IPTV uses. What's also interesting is a surveillance one. That was one that, quite honestly, I mean, we didn't foresee in the beginning, but because we did so much work on the multicast architecture of SPB to make sure that every edge node could have an optimized multicast tree to every other one, that was kind of very similar to PIM Biter's kind of architecture, but far better optimized as far as how fast the algorithm calculates it. It just works perfectly for environments like what Darren's talking about there with video surveillance. I was surprised to see how many other software applications out there rely on multicast. Even internal to Avaya itself, we had contact centers deployed all over the world. And multicast is actually one of these protocols that's underlied into the infrastructure to send updates to things. Myself, I used to work at Bloomberg as well. And if you've worked in the financial industry, you know that multicast is a pretty big part of it, from stock updates, ticker updates, that is, to news feeds, to everything else. I've seen some pretty interesting uses, and it never seems to surprise me how much there's more demand for it, but that's being pushed back by a fear of multicast because of the, you know, it is pretty damn complex. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, it can get complex, right? But it's also the multicast routing protocols. Actually, you spend all those years learning unicast routing protocols, which propagate in one direction, you know, from source away from the to the destination. But multicast is all from the destination back to the source, and it can be a mental.
And but you also got to remember is most multicast protocols aren't routing protocols. They're advertising protocols. They rely on a real routing protocol like OSPF to tell them what the actual source path is, and then they build their RPF checks off that. So now you got two protocols there, and then you got to add a bootstrap router protocol. You've got a rendezvous points and DFs, you know.
IGMPs, IGMP snooping, layers. You got layer two protocols, layer three protocols, and they all have to come together like an orchestrated choir and sing the quarry vesibules.
Yep.
To come up with a result. That's what makes it challenging. Yes, it is complicated, and you know, I've railed at the whole multicast thing, but it is necessary, right? There are applications where we need to have it. So why don't we talk a little bit about some of those challenges of PIM. So PIM is the most common, or protocol independent multicast, or PIM for short, is the most common protocol. There's two versions of it, dense mode and sparse mode. Dense mode being flood and prune, where the protocol goes out, floods every, a multicast packet just floods out to every port on every device right the way across the network. And if there's no replies, the network gradually shuts down the unused interfaces until it reaches a steady state. And then there's a thing called sparse mode, which is where every port in the network is assumed to not need it, and the ones that need it will signal back to the source that it's ready to receive a stream. But where are the challenges around there, Paul?
Well, yeah, and if you start extrapolating beyond that, right, you also have PIM SSM and you have PIM BIDIR, and but just to do the PIM dense mode, start there. It was a great place to start. It's nice. I like how you introduced that. So dense mode is, you know, this. You don't really concerned. You're not very concerned about bandwidth. That is, and it. You send all these packets out to the edge, and then you start pruning back based on where you actually have receivers, and that's just a colossal waste of bandwidth and resources. So time evolved, and you know, and people start realizing that wasn't quite a good thing, and then you get into PIM sparse mode. Now you have to think about, okay, where am I going to locate things like rendezvous points? How am I going to implement the bootstrap router protocol? How am I going to manage the actual multicast fib tables? And okay, where are my receivers at? And what happens if you're actually in a complicated multicast environment where you don't just have one source and a few receivers? What happens when you have multiple sources streaming to other sources who are streaming to thousands of receivers? Or let's say you just have a few sources who also happen to be receivers, and maybe there's the worst case scenario, actually, I think is the one that is video surveillance, is where every single camera is a source to multiple streams and there's only one or two receivers. And then that starts getting very complicated to start managing these multicast streams, because that's not really what PIM was designed for. PIM was designed for, you know, small number of sources, lots of receivers, rely on a link state protocol like OSPF or ISIS to calculate the network really fast. But then you also end up in this transient state whenever a link dies or a node dies, because now OSPF and ISIS has to recalculate, and PIM and IGMP are kind of stuck in this pause state where they're trying to wait for feedback, and you've got the potential of loops creating basically black holes in the middle of your network. Add PIM SSM, and now you got source-specific multicast because you're trying to move a little bit away from rendezvous point concepts. Add PIM BIDIR, and now you're even complicating it even more because now you're trying to use shared trees, and you have to manage the designated forwarder concept on it as well. So from the very beginning, we were trying to basically simplify all that by removing it from the picture and just say, okay, if we could do it, how would we do it better from scratch?
Yeah. Now, and for those people in the audience who haven't heard of PIM BIDIR, it's bidirectional PIM, which assumes that every source is a destination and every destination requires to connect to every source. That's a fairly uncommon, or has historically been an uncommon methodology for multicast, because nobody normally needs to talk multipoint to multipoint. But in the new VXLAN protocols that we're seeing around in the network today, they are using PIM BIDIR to do discovery. That is, if you've got a software virtual switch, it needs to discover where the other virtual switches are in the network so it can form tunnels to them. And it uses a multicast tree to discover the other nodes in the network. And of course, each switch talks to each other switch, and it needs to multicast back to the switch that it's coming from. So PIM BIDIR is becoming a thing.
Yep. And that was one of the reasons why we really pushed to get this thing out the door pretty quickly last year, because it's already been out on our 8000. Now we're releasing on some of our larger boxes and smaller boxes at the same time, is that we demonstrated at VMworld how we made VXLAN easy. You just turn on this multicast function on SVB, and the IP multicast is just handled automatically for you. You don't have to get into PIMBinder or be scared of, you know, VXLAN because of it.
So you're coming back on this transparent networking, or VMware would love you, because then the network's not a problem. You just turn this feature on and you walk away from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the nice thing is we also enable this in VRFs, right? So a VRF is just another construct to us. So whether or not you're doing this in a global routing table or you're doing it in a VRF, it's the same simplicity. And the scale, there's some pretty interesting things we did in scale too, which is kind of cool. So we can handle tens of thousands of streams in reconversion, incredibly quick speeds, you know, down to sub 50 milliseconds. I think, Darren, you said once you saw 20 milliseconds. And we can also do summarization of multicast. That's something we've never really had before in multicast, right? So I can take 5,000 streams and put into one FIB entry.
Right, so you can scale up massively because there's only a finite FIB or finite space in the TCAM and the BCAMs.
Right.
And being able to summarize your multicast routes down to something means that you can get, you know, many, many more routes instead of having to spend your life monitoring them like I do.
Yes, exactly.
Coming up with ever weirder and more complex methodologies for monitoring the TCAM capacity in every single device.
Right. And that's the problem, right? It's just, we're limited by physics, right? We only have so much space and memory.
PIM can get complicated, right? Just designing it gets pretty complicated. Rendezvous points and bootstrap routers and redundant, you know, rendezvous points and all that. And as you say, some of the routing protocols around those are prone to looping if you're not very careful. And what we're effectively saying is that Avaya has this based on the SPB, the shortest path bridging protocol, which we've talked about in previous shows. The shortest path bridging protocol is of the IEEE version of a multi-point networking backbone, multi-point, multi-path. That is, you would have heard a lot of talk about Trill. Trill has been invented by the ITF. This shortest path bridging is the IEEE, but it's got different capabilities and different features about that. We've talked about it in previous shows, so I recommend them to you, and check out the show notes because I'll link off to those. But SBB has a bunch of abilities to carry extended TRV attributes and convergence things, which are and effectively what you're doing in SPB is carrying the multicast in the SPB TLVs. Is that correct?
Yeah. So when you mentioned there about Trill being ITF and SPB being IEEE, actually, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And actually, pretty cool from myself having worked in both the ITF and the IEEE. This is one of the most fun I've had in standardization because it's combined the work out of the ISIS working group in the IETF as well as the inner working group in the IEEE. So while the standard spec in SBB is looking as the future for all control plane out of the IEEE for everything we do from here point forward, it was actually released as 802.1aq in the IEEE, and at the same time, a sister companion RFC was released, RFC 6329, and both documents were held in state until they could both be released at exactly the same time because they point to each other. So actually, this is one of the first protocols where both the IETF and the IEEE worked on together to make sure it was it was sound and scale.
Okay, I didn't know that, so that's news to me. I'm glad you told me because I wasn't trying to say that, you know, it's an ITF versus IEEE thing. I just was saying they were developed, you know, in different forums. It's not that they are two answers to the same problem. They were just different ways of going about the same thing. The second thing I wanted to talk about, you've made the point about no virtualization capabilities in PIM. Is that you're referring there to running multicast over VRFs, over MPLS?
Well, there are some virtualization techniques in PIM, right? But you got to get into some pretty complex stuff with VRF and PIM, or if you if you want to do it in any kind of function, you get into an MPLS kind of implementation, right? For us, it's still a VRF, but it's one line, five words to turn on the VRF, and one line, I think it's four words, to turn on multicast in that VRF. And you get all the same functionality of an MVPN sitting inside that VRF. So we actually have deployments where people are using SBB to replace spanning tree, OSPF, and PIM in the global routing table, and then they have a VRF spun up using SBB and running separate multicast in it to keep it secure and separated from the global routing space.
I get the general idea. So we know that PIM's sort of a thing, but I guess the trick now is to talk to Darren, who's actually doing real-world multicast with his video surveillance. And I mean, I haven't heard of video surveillance using multicast, so tell me why you're using multicast for that, and what's unique about that?
So traditionally, we took the approach of doing multicast from the edge because we have a very unique situation. In certain instances where you have critical infrastructure response from police, fire, different agencies that may want to access video simultaneously, it didn't make sense for us to regenerate that traffic from a unicast perspective. So at the very edge of our network, every camera that exists in our deployments are going to generate as the multicast source directly from the camera at the edge. Our installations in citywide surveillance can go anywhere from 8 to 10,000 cameras. Right now over in China, I'm working on a surveillance casino operations that is going to be 40,000 plus ports, all multicast for its operation. And one thing I wanted to allude on a second that Paul talked about was PIM dense mode and flooding. It's not just the concept that it floods out and then prunes down to relieve the traffic. Realize that after the source sends out and begins to flow the video flow across the network, every PIM device that is in that particular network is going to maintain that state throughout the dense mode operation. So I have casinos over in Macau in China that have roughly 3,000 or 4,000 cameras that have attempted to run PIM dense mode, and it's brought the network down to its knees just simply with the flood and prune states. So it can get very, very complex quickly. If we look at PIM sparse mode, that becomes an extremely unique situation for us. I'll use the instance of prisons. Prisons typically, in the event that you have a breakout or an event that requires surveillance, will typically want to see all of their video feeds very, very quickly. And so if you look at one of our cameras that generates the multicast feeds and you look at an operations center for a prison, a guard may want to hit a button and populate a monitor wall with 256 video feeds simultaneously so they can see everything that's going on in that prison. What that causes is, in our case, somewhere between a 4 to a 6 megabit stream gets encapsulated in the register message that goes back to the rendezvous point. And when you hit 256 simultaneous register messages going back to a rendezvous point, it's extremely CPU intensive and gets handled by port zero of the CPU. And what I see across the board is I'll see CPU spikes on these massive cores just handling that software-based entity for the register message, because it decapsulates that video, sends it down the shared side of the tree immediately, and that takes quite a hit on the CPU.
Yeah.
The interesting thing that I saw with Avaya is under the worst case scenario that I could produce with SPB, I never saw the CPU spike above 6% in the same scenario.
So only the messages are actually being handled in the CPU, potentially everything else is done in silicon.
Well, there are no register message. You've alleviated the need for PIM. So if you look at the biggest pain of what I do on a regular basis as a multicast architect is dealing with the complexities of PIM. We have, in my opinion, a broken model. You've got spanning tree, and then you're going to have a layer 3 routing protocol, and then you're going to have PIM on top of that. And when that breaks, you have to wait for each of those to reconverge. And in some cases, I was just at a nuclear power plant about 2 months ago. The network reconvergence for video upon a break in the line or an event that occurred was taking 35 minutes.
Wow. That doesn't sound like awesome networking right there.
Well, especially in a nuclear power plant.
That's where I was going to go. In a nuclear facility, I would hope that if we were having a reactor meltdown, that I would know about it quicker than 35 minutes.
Yeah. If you figure that physical damage might be part of the problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Darren and Paul, you guys have both mentioned the point that PIM in this solution, PIM is not required. So you're going to have some engineers that are out there listening to the podcast thinking, okay, so if PIM's gone, how is my multicast tree getting built? You've said SPB and TLVs. Well, okay, walk us through the process, because out at the edge clients and multicast speakers are not going to know anything about SPB being in the middle, the fabric that's going to carry this traffic. So walk us through the process of how a multicast stream is, you know, if someone's still using IGMP to join the group, how is that happening and getting handled by the fabric? And then how is the tree built across the fabric if PIM is not involved?
Okay, so let me try let me back up there so I can get into more of an academic statement before I get down into the details. So from a protocol design perspective, right, we've all designed networks here. At no single point does any host actually know what the routing protocols are in the network that are giving it connectivity to the internet or to whatever they're trying to connect to, right? They have no idea whether it's RIP, OSPF, or in the case of multicast, it could be DVMRP, right. PIMDM, PIMSM. They have no idea, right? They simply just send their packets in and they expect that it's going to be handled. that modular construction is what allows us to scale intranets and internets so large. Now, take the case of multicast. Multicast is, works because of IGMP. It joins and receivers and sources streaming and accepting protocols, and they just expect that there's a routing protocol in the network that's providing the connectivity. Now, the one thing you have to realize is that when we're talking about SBB for IP multicast, we do not mean SBB as a spanning tree replacement, because SBB is actually capable of doing much, much more. It, like I mentioned a second ago, SBB, because it's based on ISIS, already has IP routing information in it. So we have networks that use ISIS as their routing protocol instead of OSPF, and they use SBB for the forwarding. So routing decision is done at the edge, just like if it was OSPF. And the forwarding is done over SBB. So it's directed, controlled forwarding. And it's very similar to MPLS, but it's all done automatically behind the scenes. There's no LDP, BGP, none of that. To turn on a VRF, same thing. You configure VRF blue and you assign an ISID to it. And boom, you have a VRF. And every single router out there that's a member of that same ISID sees it in their private environment.
Because ISIS is a link state protocol. It distributes that information across all the participating routers.
Exactly. So all we do is we add a little bit of chunk of information inside of ISIS that says, okay, besides knowing about IPv4 and IPv6 in the global routing table, here's some IPv4 and IPv6 information inside of a VRF. So that's how we keep them isolated and preventing them from overlapping. Right? So we support full IP VPN VRF functionality just like you would get out of MPLS, but with just ISIS. Now, the multicast stuff, what we do is, if I step back a second before I get to multicast, because we're reusing ISIS for what ISIS is phenomenal for, that is routing and scale and ease of use. In fact, actually, if you know SBF, you already know more than half of what you need to know to do SBB's ISIS.
But even with SBB, right, you still don't need to know a lot about ISIS to make it run.
Absolutely.
It's self-configuring, self-optimizing. And I mean, some of the people who aren't familiar with ISIS would be thinking of carrier-grade networks with hundreds of thousands of routers in them in multiple level zones. And, you know, we're talking about a data center network or a campus LAN with 400 or 500 switches in the worst possible case.
And we actually have deployments where it's multiple campuses connected together over, you know, Metro East services. So you have 4 or 5 campuses running SBB across all of them. And you can easily run SBB up to 1,000 switches and thousands of thousands of routes. So we're not worried about scale, right?
Mm, that's right.
Okay, so take that same model of ISIS. It's simpler than OSPF. It's all the power of what you understand from OSPF. It's easier to run, like you said. And at the edge, you have default routes just like you have for the last, you know, how many years we've been running IP on PCs and servers. That means that same device that's sitting out there on the edge sends an IGMP join into this first router. And if it's an SBB routing node, it's going to see the IGMP request or the source, and it uses a new TLV that we've constructed that says, hey, I know about this multicast source. And distributes that out in ISIS. At that point, any single edge switch that has been configured to listen to IP multicast, and that's a pretty critical thing here, IP multicast only goes to nodes that have been configured to listen to IP multicast. If they're not configured to listen to it, they'll just ignore it. And it's such a tiny amount of information that it's irrelevant on the box. At that point, if a receiver pops up at the edge with a join saying, hey, I want to join a stream, that edge box says, oh, hey, I know where that source is. It's hanging off that SBB node over on the far end of the network. I'm going to announce that same TLV, but I want to receive it. At that point, every node in between them that's on the source path, because they already know they're on a source path because that's part of SBB, immediately installs state for that multicast. What gets really cool about this, though, is the convergence speeds of the multicast actually gets better the more receivers there are or sources, because the tree simply joins at the closest point that makes sense from a source path perspective. You don't have to go back to a rendezvous point, and the source doesn't have to worry about syncing back and negotiating with a rendezvous point. It simply just joins. And it's like locking an entire train track all in one or 2 milliseconds. It just locks in. It's really cool.
So instead of a big PIM tree getting built out and a lot of decisions being made about, you don't have to do a reverse path forwarding check here to see if you should be sending out on this particular interface, because SBB is sorting that all out in a really different way, relying on the topology calculations of ISIS, where the sources and destinations are joining into the fabric.
That's right. In fact, what's really cool, this is an edge-only function. So you can have 15 different vendors in your core, and it all still works because they're just relying on the same SBB multicast algorithms that have been optimized.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that the lack of need for those RPF checks is huge. with respect to CPU load that's placed on in a traditional PIM environment. It's interesting where you're coming from, asking about network engineers saying, okay, being hesitant, because when I was first contacted by Avaya, I was actually talking to Ed Kohler and we were on a meeting, and my initial response was, no, I don't want to hear about it. No. The second time I was on a meeting, I said, no, I don't want to hear about it. Then he sent me a white paper and I read it and it piqued my interest. Then I saw it and I was blown away. I mean, it is phenomenal.
I guess what's happening there is that when they do the RPF check, they actually have to recursively hit the routing table multiple times until they find the egress interface.
Yeah.
And that's part of where the CPU – I mean, I'm just trying to drill into –
Well, by that you mean PIM, not an SPB, yeah, right?
That's right, yes. PIM. Sorry, yeah. Other people are looking for the reverse route or the reverse path. They may have to recursively search for routes through the routing table until they find the interface that is the reverse path.
Yep.
And that's why the CPU hit is so high.
And think about the scalability of that. Think about if you're talking 15,000 cameras across a city.
Mm.
It's huge.
Yes. And you're doing the multiple streams and you're reconverging multiple streams at a point. So, Paul, in addition to video surveillance, what are some of the other customers doing with this sort of technology?
Well, yeah, it's actually pretty interesting to see how people are using this, right? So you take Darren's example of the multicast when it comes from a camera that's surveillance. There's also use cases where we've seen hospitals looking at this for IPTV, where they're streaming it across their infrastructure for guest services and things like that, right? The really nice thing about being a link state-based approach of doing this means that the tree construction is so fast, and the more receivers you have, that actually speeds up. So you can actually tie each multicast group to an individual channel so that when someone's flipping channel up or channel down on the remote, it's as if they're, you know, back in the 80s and just doing cable TV. It's that fast, the convergence. Or you can just group them all on and send them all down to the edge and do it that way too. There's a lot of flexibility in how you architect it. So you get down to architecting the streams more and less concern about trying to figure out what, you know, protect the protocol from itself like you would a PIM. So here you just kind of trust that this thing works just like you turn a key in your car. It just works. So the IPTV deployments work really nice in hospitals. Of course, it's kind of interesting looking at the stock ticker kind of model. That's one that we've seen. Very interesting because it's so optimized to get out there so we can send ticker information on one FIB entry, and we can send as much as we want all at the edge, because then you have a lot of receivers at that point. And the more receivers you had, the more it scales, and you still don't affect the CPU performance or even the memory.
I know the guys that are in the financial field dealing with stocks specifically are going to be really keenly interested in that, because my understanding is there are automated trading systems that can be based on millisecond or sub-millisecond decisions based on what a particular value is.
Exactly.
So getting that information in a timely fashion, predictably with the least amount of latency, is really key to their day-to-day operations.
Right. And that's really key, the latency word. I'm so glad you said that, because that's become such an incredible buzzword for very interesting reasons, and oftentimes is misunderstood. Right. So latency is one thing you look at when you look at a box. Look, every vendor out there pretty much uses the same architectures for the chips in their box, right? So we all have pretty much the same latency numbers going in port one and out port two in the same box. But once you go multiple hops, the latency numbers get completely out of whack, because now you're buffering and you're dealing with, you know, okay, do I do cut through? But then cut through doesn't really work for 90% of actual applications out there. They're more specific. So store and forward is better. Okay, but if you do that, then what do you do with the latency? The reality is, if you back off this, what you really want is you want to guarantee you have the lowest latent path from end to end. And that's what SBB was architected for. That way we can guarantee that when you turned on fiber channel over Ethernet, it would just work, whether it's one hop or five hops, because we can guarantee the lowest latent path across multiple hops. And you can test using the OANM that already exists for several years, that have been deployed for several years. So all that service provider OANM stuff we built with 802.1ag for converting SONET into Ethernet is actually completely applicable to the data center for testing fiber channel of Ethernet, or for testing connectivity between a camera and a receiver, or from testing connectivity from, say, two voice or IP phones.
So you're talking monitoring of end-to-end performance with a hop-by-hop visibility into where the weak point is.
Exactly. Right. These protocols were never designed to be just looked at one by one. They were meant to be holistically viewed as a way of providing a solution not only of connectivity, but also performance management.
All right. So the question here is, now, let's say I decided I wanted to build a surveillance network over the top of my existing network. Do I need to forklift, or is there some other way?
No, you don't have to forklift. Actually, the customer that Darren was referring to there that we first got in contact with, they're running, you know, some pretty interesting ways where they have their multicast video surveillance running in a VRF, and there's, you know, a separate VRF for other things, and the global routing table is doing all the same things it's always done. So they can, we like to call it sip or gulp. You can sip as slow as you want, or gulp it all down, or any combination in between. And what's nice is we've seen the conversion of this, because it's just ISIS, right? When you get right down to it, it's ISIS that's providing all the awareness. You can run it ships in the night with the existing OSPF and slowly convert, and so migration becomes really easy.
So what you're saying there is you just, at the edge where you want your multicast, you can just start with little gray areas of dropping in the Avaya to get used. You have to design that a little carefully perhaps, but you could start putting Avaya where you need it. You don't have to just forklift end-to-end to get where you need to be.
Exactly.
Availability. What products are going to have these features in them? Because the Avaya product line is actually quite wide. And if, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a full stack of products. There's chassis, there's rackables, there's campus, there's edge, there's the whole bit. Is this feature across the range?
Yes and no. Let me quantify that. So SBB is on several product lines. It's on our largest, you know, VSP9K, the big modular box that's running campus cores and data center cores. It's on our VSP7K, which is our optimized top of rack. It's also on our ERS8K, which is, you know, the flagship campus and smaller data center core. So the multicast edge functionality has been on the ERS for a few months now. And the multicast edge functionality is coming to a new platform we're announcing here soon called the VSP4K. And it's also going to be on VSP9K. But I say that, why yes and no, because you can take any one of those boxes and they can be a core node to a multicast edge node, right? So take, for example, if you had ERS 8Ks on the edge, you can use the top of rack as a core because it's just switching. It doesn't, yes. It's not aware of what the actual payload is. It's just simply switching, you know, MAC addresses. And because it's doing it in an optimized, controlled way, it's not doing reverse learning and flooding. It's only forwarding out the ports based on the shortest path. It's guaranteed to actually have that optimized capability. So you can mix and match any combination of the boxes together.
Perfect. Darren, I wanted to ask you, I know in the earlier on in the show, just before we started, you were telling me how unique and different this technology is. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
When you start talking about fabrics, you know, from our company, we deal with a lot of vendors and what their concept of fabric is. And it became pretty evident when I started doing research on this that in comparison, it's, in my opinion, a total solution. If you look at a Fast Connect fabric, okay, basically it's the equivalent of you build a very, very fast road like the Autobahn. But if I still have the same 15-year-old car, what's it going to do for me? If you take a look at a lot of fabrics that are out there, I could reconverge in time frames of, you know, 5 microseconds. But if I'm still relying on overlaying protocols that are going to take the traditional time frame that they've always taken to reconverge, what have I gained? From the perspective of SPB, we're talking about fast reconvergence in the fabric that does not rely on antiquated 15-year-old protocols.
Well, I was thinking 30-year-old OSPF.
I was being kind. We were at the ATF forum for Avaya in Florida, and I threw the question out to the audience: when is the last book that had been published on multicast? And I think it's an upwards of 15 years old on multicast design.
But 2002, I still have it.
Yeah.
It was the last time I read one, which is on that. So yeah, you make a point, right? The point is that this particular approach is unique and different. The multicast is bound down to the SPB, but it doesn't break the compatibility with any of your legacy. You're still speaking PIM, right?
Absolutely. You know, you have integration with all the existing protocols. It's important to point out that this is not just an ISP-based protocol. I mean, this really is completely applicable to the enterprise. And the performance that I've seen, most of what I deploy is in the enterprise-based environment for surveillance. And I have to tell you, I've never seen for our product and video faster reconvergence in cases where I've gone in and cut fiber lines and disconnected fiber lines. I brought our executive staff down to my lab, and I had 4,000 multicast flows active on the network. And I had 32 of them up on a monitor wall. And then I took the primary lines and I disconnected the fiber and I asked them to point out where the video loss was. Right. Traditionally, in this environment, that is going to lock our software up. We are going to go to a reconnect state. We are going to go to a reconvergence state and our software is going to struggle to catch up. What we saw in that room was lightning fast reconvergence that looked like we had a little bit of pixelized video, but never dropped a frame.
That's huge for you because, as you say, you know, in the event of a prison breach or a, you know, a critical event, they hit the panic button, which puts every camera up on the screen while they look for what is the trigger event. They want to, as you say, see all 256 or 1,000 cameras and look for something weird happening.
Hey, Darren, by the way, could you touch on what you had to do to configure that network?
Yeah, it's important to point out, and representatives from Avaya came down to my lab and assisted me with the first configuration. And the funny and interesting story behind this is, as I'm going through the configuration, I think I must have said at least 15 times, this cannot be it. This cannot be all that I have to do to make this work. Once you deploy the SPB core or the SPB on this network, you don't have to touch it. It's a simple 2 or 3 line configuration to modify almost any point in this network. And I think I must have worn Avaya's engineers' ears out repeatedly saying, this cannot be it. This cannot be this simple. It's just not what I'm used to. I'm used to deployments with AutoRP, Anycast RP, things that are so godforsakenly difficult to deal with that it's a revolutionary change, both in performance and simplicity of deployment.
And that's the point, actually, I like to point out to people. It really is just 1 or 2 lines of command. And only time I say 2 is really when you want to do it in VRF, because then you have a second command. And if you want to just do the regular global routing table, it's 1 command at the top of the config and tell you the box is now listening to IP multicast joins. It listens to IGMP just like it was a PIM box. So this is what's really critical of this is we see a lot of people out there who are interested in this because it's so simple. And since 90% of all the deployments of SPB that I'm aware of, even beyond Avaya, have been in enterprise because it's so simple, compared to all the other overlaid protocol perspective, this makes life just easy and allows you to actually say yes to multicast instead of being afraid of it. So it's been a lot of fun for me to see this.
Well, I think we've just about hit all of the topics for the show this week, and I'd like to thank you for listening to the Packet Pushers and to remind you that we'll be back again in a week or so, so make sure that you come back. I'd like to thank our external resources for joining us this week. Paul, thanks very much for joining us once again. Where can people find you?
You can find me online, Twitter feed at PMBHagen and paul@imhagen.net.
Fantastic, and thanks for coming on and joining us. And Darren, where can people find you? And where, tell us a little bit about where you work.
I work for Schneider Electric, is our parent company, out of the division of Pelco. That's our surveillance division. And they can get in touch with me at dgiacomini@pelco.com is my primary point of contact.
Thanks very much for coming on the show. I appreciate, clearly you know more about multicast than I do. And I really appreciate your point of view as somebody who's actually at the angry end of this and has spent a lot of time working on this. It's sort of made me sort of sit back and think how much I don't know about multicast. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Ethan, how about you? Are you wrapped for today?
I have a little bit more work to do today, tie up some projects. I am actually running a little project at work that is not all that exciting. It's a documentation project, which makes most engineers groan and shudder. But what happened was a nice little blog post on packetpushers.net that inspired me to get some documentation done. The blog post just said, you know, you should really have this, this, and this and in your documentation library. And it's, by golly, I don't. It's too much in my head, and I have been working on that. And I got some other stuff going on, of course. But you can find me at EC Banks on Twitter, and I blog at packetpushers.net for the most part. And you can also find me at Network Computing, Network World, and Tech Target these days.
And, of course, I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com and on the Twitters is at etherealmind. Don't forget that you can find out more about the products and links to more information. There's a very good YouTube video that deep dives down on this technology, which we've got a link for in the show notes, and also some links back to some other shows where we talked about SPB in detail, as I've alluded to, and also there'll be some links off to Avaya's website so you can find out more information. Don't forget, you can check out the forum at forum.packetpushers.net and leave comments on the show on the blog post that I just mentioned. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.